Yeah, having my head shoved into the steps of the Ulster Bank in Ranelagh, cold butt of a gun put into the back of your skull. That's a moment where you go, okay, yeah, I think this one's up.
How does a high-flying academic become one of Ireland's most prolific bank robbers?
What I would see as the most important part of this still lies open.
I'm Not Here to Hurt You, a brand new series from the award-winning team behind the Indo Daily.
That November day, that's where it all begins.
Out now, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.
Hello and welcome to Real Health with me, Carl Henry. Music is my guest's trade, but now he's using the redemptive power of it to help people in a clinical setting in the form of music therapy. From helping older adults with dementia to working with children in areas of social disadvantage, the therapy has many applications. I'm delighted to be joined by musician, frontman of Bellex One, and music therapist, Paul Noonan. Paul, welcome to the studio.
Thanks, Carl.
How are you?
I'm very well.
I'm fascinated about this. As someone who, I love music, I love the everything about it, and I'm fascinated by the thought of it as a therapy process. What is it? That's a big question to open up.
But I'm still figuring it out, really, but I think most simply it's the use of music to help people in clinical or community settings is the snappy one-liner. But, you know, I'm still, you know, as a music lover and as a writer and performer of music, I kind of, for a long time, felt there was something there that could be bottled and deployed in more sort of targeted ways. And I started reading about it, about sort of how music works in the brain, like neurologically, or, I mean, there's no exact science on that, but it's a fascinating area to kind of get into. And I read a book by the neurologist Oliver Sacks called Musicophilia. And it was just a litany of amazing case studies about how music had played a role in people's rehabilitation post acquired brain injury, mainly. That was his kind of speciality, and how differently music works cognitively, and how it uses different channels in the brain, and all that. It was just really fascinating. So the only place to study music therapy in Ireland is in Limerick, in UL. So I went for it and did the master's there for 2 years. You know, but every day is a school day. Still, I'm only qualified maybe 2 years and practicing 2 years part time. And I love it. I think it's just an extension. It's a wonderful extension of how I use music and the role of music in my life. And it's very much a two way thing in terms of, like, it very much feeds my own creativity and my own writing. And I feel I am able to sort of deploy 20 plus years of making music, coupled with, you know, the sort of more formal learnings around it as a proper sort of clinical intervention, you know, that forms part of a suite of interventions with somebody in hospital or in a school or in a nursing home. You know, there has to be, it has to sort of stand beside speech and language, physio, you know, those disciplines that have been around and been sort of formalized. So, because there's a danger of it being perceived as kind of, Asher, you'll come in now, you'll play FUL songs and we'll have the crack and it'll be a lovely time. And it has to be more than that, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's all well and good, but it has to have sort of, I hate to say sort of measurable outcomes, but we are, because it's a discipline that's not yet sort of in the tent in terms of being part of our offerings as a health service, we're very much cognizant of the need to have measurable goals and objectives and have that sort of proper clinical path to it. So, yeah, that's all a bit of a sort of new skill set for me to learn.
And how does music therapy work? So if I, you know, if I go to you for a music therapy session, how does that set the scene for our listeners? I'm sure every session is different. And well,
yeah,
well aware
I mean,
of that,
it depends why you're coming as well, of course. Yeah. It depends. I mean, there is a referral pathway. Say if I'm seeing children with autism, I work across two schools here in the inner city in Dublin, and I see some children with autism. I see some children who are living with adverse childhood conditions at home, or have come from like a lot of difficulty at home. So I would be referred a child by a social worker or a teacher, and I would have a file, and I would have points as to why they've been referred. So I would initially spend the first three or four sessions assessing the child as to what role I see music having to meet their needs. And so, I mean, if a child, I actually made the mistake with children of having too much on display initially. So often a child will come into the room and go, wow, and just go nuts on the drums and various keyboards and bits and bobs. So I generally have kind of learned to wind that in and introduce things slowly. I mean, with kids, it's often about just establishing a relationship and trust and that sort of positive engagement with an adult. Music is often secondary. Again, it depends on why they're referred. But yeah, so that would be how I'd approach work with children.
Okay. And it, in terms of the therapy, is it that the child or the adult plays? Or does the therapist lead the play? Or
the goal is to always have the child or adult, again, depending on the reason for referral, but it's not just a receptive thing for them, that they are engaged musically and are very much facilitated to express themselves musically, however that can happen. So I co-write songs with children and adults and make up bits and pieces. With kids, like the goof goes a long way, like making up silly songs, a lot of fart music, a lot of just silliness, because it's play is universally a wonderful thing. So it can be disarming. It can kind of very much create a sort of safe, contained space for kids. So yeah, we get them playing as much as we can.
One thing you mentioned earlier is that, you know, the impact that music has on a brain function level in terms of neurology. Tell us a little bit more about that.
I'm not a neurologist, but I have a number of clients living with disorders of consciousness, having had acquired brain injury. So I have one client who's in a minimally conscious state, and he is nonverbal and, for the most part, unable to move. So he's in a wheelchair or in bed. But the things that reach him are touch in terms of physical therapy and sound, music. You can tell that he can move his head, so, and he follows music sources. He follows sound sources around the room and is very much stilled by music. He can be quite agitated otherwise, but and sort of engage in some like arm flailing and that sort of involuntary or possibly frustrated movement, but is very much stilled by music. So neurologically, I mean, I am working towards brain imaging with this particular client, but from case studies around this, I mean, it's with modern EEG scans and even fMRI scans, the parts of the brain can be seen to be stimulated by music. And Oliver Sacks goes into this in Musicophilia, even the different components of music like pitch, timbre, speed, volume can stimulate different parts of the brain because the brain pulls music apart into its components and that's how we process it. So that's fascinating. I mean, yeah, that's, I mean, it's sort of great. I'm really looking forward to being able to do that, but I kind of get a sense that, yes, it's all wonderful, but what are our learnings around it? What we can say is that it stimulates cognitive activity, which in itself is a good thing.
But I'm sure everyone who's listening in, myself included, music can do many different things. It can be calming.
Yeah.
It can be exciting.
Yeah.
It can be motivating. Like if I'm having a really bad day and I don't want to train, I'll stick Rocky on. and the Rocky soundtrack every time just signals, it triggers my brain into, right, we're going to do this. And it's like Rocky IV in Russia. And, you know, you kind of go there in a really weird space.
Yeah.
Or if you're having a really busy day and you need to calm and bring the senses down a bit, you put something like, my playlist would be like Norah Jones or Evening Jazz on Spotify or just something quite good. And it brings the senses down.
Yeah.
And it just, it helps to unwind or helps to wind up. Or, you know, before a race or an event, I'll have Riverdance on. I'll have Rocky. I'll have, what else is on my playlist? Inhaler, actually, on my playlist at the minute.
Yeah.
There's certain songs that you create. You can the brain goes to certain places with different types of music. I think we can all associate with that and the power of it. Chat to me about, you mentioned it earlier too, but the importance of music to you on a personal level then in terms of life and what music does for you. Obviously, as a musician, it's been your work, but presumably it's been a lot more than that.
Yeah. Yeah, it has. I mean, I've always been really moved by music, you know, and I think as you're kind of really falling for music, for me, that was around 14 or 15 years of age. And I don't have older siblings, so I kind of my falling for music was through being introduced to music by a friend's older sibling, and just feeling the sort of that fierceness of connection with music and how certain songs or helped to make sense of life at that point. It felt like, and also sort of taking ownership of those songs and those artists as mine and part of my identity and nothing to do with my parents. And, you know, I feel that I kind of was into music then with a sort of purity and a ferocity that it's been all downhill since, you know, because even, especially getting into making music yourself, you know, there's a bit of a, you know, you might like a sausage, but you really don't want to see how it's made, you know? So you tend to sort of look behind the curtain a bit and you're looking at sort of what guitar pedals people are using and what kind of production is going on in the background. So it kind of, I remember, the band, we would bring binoculars to gigs so we could see what people were using and that kind of thing. So it kind of, in some ways, my fear is that it stripped the magic away a little bit, but I mean, I wouldn't trade it. I love making music and we love making music collectively. And it's such a wonderful thing to be able to do with your friends for 20 years. In terms of my own, like, it's definitely helped me make sense of life. I suppose, especially in my late teens and 20s when things were, you know, there's a lot of turmoil in those years for various reasons. And
I think we all have a song from our 20s that provides us with a sense of...
Yeah.
Or a band, or it gives you it kind of gives you something to hold on to. Like for mine, for my late teens, it was Oasis and the Gallagher. It was just that time where that all kind of took off, and it gives you a sense of community, and it gives you a sense of belonging. It gives you a sense of, you know, just something to a crutch.
And I'm sure hearing those songs now, you're transported back.
Oh, every time.
Yeah.
And my vivid imagination, if I hear a certain song, I can tell you exactly where, when, how, who. That's how my brain kind of functions.
And that's a big part of working with older adults with dementia, say, that music, again, transports them back to certain times in their life and to certain parts of themselves that have unraveled as well. You know, that, you know, often somebody who's kind of, who's no longer recognizes loved ones or has, you know, lost a lot of sort of memory and speech and can remember the lyrics to a song from 50 years ago. And again, that's music working in sort of parallel neural pathways to other cognition and other kinds of memory. Yeah, that's a big part. I also do some work in a nursing home here in Dublin, and a big part of that is stirring reminiscence and connecting people to their selves, you know, that have dimmed somewhat, but that are still there and just need to be kind of unearthed.
Was it scary going to Limerick?
Yeah, because, you know, I was about 20 years older than everyone else in the class. And I was, you know, there's a fine line between wanting to kind of get down to the kids and kind of being a little bit creepy. So, you know, of a Tuesday night, you're out doing student nights in Limerick. And
it's
30 years since I did it myself as an undergraduate. So it was wonderful, though, because it kind of, it was scary because I'd been out of academia, not that I was ever particularly in academia, but I hadn't, you know, read or written academically in a long time. So that took a bit to get the hang of. But I loved it. I loved it. It was kind of like, as I'm a middle-aged man with children and a mortgage, and I was kind of escaping a little bit for 2 days a week and going down and staying in my B&B and going to the canteen and hanging out as a student for a couple of days a week. So there was a lovely thing to immerse it. I think it was great that I did it away from Dublin as well. I wasn't living at home while I was doing it, so I compartmentalized in that way.
And for people listening in, thinking of doing something a bit different, a bit mad is probably the wrong word, but certainly a bit different, a bit of a leap of faith. You know, you followed your passion, you follow, and you took it to the, as an extension of it, into what you now do in terms of music therapy. That, you know, it is important to take a risk.
Yeah, feel the fear and do it anyway. So, I don't want to be flippant about it, but it was. I think with Bellex One, we've been going almost 25 years now, and it's been a wonderful trip, and we've had all kinds of other projects as well as music makers. But it, as a sort of extension of how I use music, and also something that I suppose I felt that making music was in some ways a little narcissistic, or was kind of all about me and my output, and look at me, and am I like, you know, hush now and listen to my song sort of thing. And whereas with music therapy, that's very much flipped. And I felt I had to unlearn a lot of that sort of performative instinct in sessions, say. That sessions don't become a gig. Like a group session in a nursing home doesn't become a gig.
And it flipped because you're the one listening?
Well, I'm the one who's... It's not about the quality of the music that's made. It's about facilitating others to make music. And
you find that challenging?
Yeah, because my instinct is to go for the levers.
Of course
that,
it is, yeah.
That are sort of more performative and ache the gee, you know? So, and I also kind of like not worrying about the quality of the product, of what we're making. It's about the fact that we are making it, mm-hmm. you know? I wouldn't be like, you know, criticizing people on their tuning or on their timing and stuff. It's about... Yeah. Making them comfortable enough to express themselves, because you know some kids especially not a bother and are really free and expressive and are unburdened by any self-consciousness, but for some people it's a real exposure of themselves and they feel very, very vulnerable doing that, expressing themselves in that way.
When you go home at the end of the day then, so after a concert you go home, presumably you're wired for, I would imagine, after performing to, you know, a group of people. After a busy day then of music therapy,
yeah.
How do you go home after a day of that?
Man, I have a newfound respect for teachers because I'm in a school or across two schools for like a full teaching school day, which is like, you know, 9 to 3, and I'm wrecked after it, you know. Yeah, it is. It's obviously a different thing, but I do. I get tremendous satisfaction out of it. Sometimes it's frustrating if I feel like I haven't landed, or I haven't connected, or I haven't facilitated connection. Because sometimes with children with a lot of needs, you can be kind of sometimes. So, you know, especially children with autism can be very hard for them to focus and to feel like you're engaging musically. You know, I can feel sometimes I'm kind of, there might be like a few minutes of music engagement in like a half an hour session. And sometimes that's enough, you know, because the other time is spent tending to the relationship that's there. And often kids like that, they can take a long time for it to feel comfortable for them to stay in the room,
yeah,
and for them, yeah, safety and containment is a big part of it, you know. And they'd be pushing my buttons and trying to sort of, yeah, there's a dance there, you know, with some of the messers.
Challenging,
yeah,
but rewarding,
absolutely, yeah, yeah, it is. I mean, I get imposter syndrome. I'm sure we all do at times in our lives, but. I'm a chancer here. I'm just kind of dicking around with music, but the satisfaction, I suppose, comes from realizing that idea of somehow using what I've learned as a writer and a performer for all this time, then sort of channeling that through more formal education in the space, and then feeling like you're using both of those things to help somebody, to help a child write a goofy song, or help a child to work on their language skills, to say words beginning in F, for example, a child I have at the moment, finding F words in song and helping a child in sort of tangible ways like that. It's really rewarding.
And so it comes from taking that big leap of, you know, you jump out of your comfort zone, you do something you really want to do, and then, you jump in feet first, you learn, and you get the reward. It's been great to catch up. I really enjoyed that.
Absolutely.
It's been really interesting. I think people listening in will get from our conversation what music therapy is.
Good.
The role that it has in society. And I think on any level, you just think back to what music does on an individual level for all of us, both you and I and people listening in, people who have autism or dementia or whatever. Music does so much for us that we can all pick out that song. We can all pick, and the memory related to the song. And you can almost see and feel the map in your brain as it goes, hops from one to the next to the next. It's incredibly powerful, and it's been great to catch up. We're really glad that you came in. Thanks so much, Carl. And folks, I really hope you enjoyed our conversation today. We covered a lot of ground, something a little bit different, but really important in terms of overall health. And I really hope that you enjoyed our conversation. As ever, you know where we are, at Carl Henry PT, realhealth@independent.ie. And we'll see you next week.